strikes me that the root of a cult film often is its complete unpredictability. I mean, how could you ever have known that a story of two sort of innocent lovers stranded in a transvestite's castle could have prompted, you know, midnight screenings and just this massive following?
Absolutely. I mean, and it's important that you mention midnight screenings, because there was a series of cinemas across America that had a screening schedule called Midnight Movies, where a lot of these cult films came from, and Rocky Horror Picture Show was certainly one of the films that benefited from that. And it became one of these word of mouth films. People discovered it, they came to it. Rocky Horror Picture Show, I think, is one of those films that it does take chance. If you look at the sexual politics of the film, the racial politics, the kind of dissident look at society that the film takes, it's one of those films that really didn't have to toe any kind of line. You know, it really could be as subversive as it wanted. And I think the whole attitude of the film was, you know, if we find an audience, great. If we don't, it's not cost a lot of money to make. At the time, it had no stars. It made a star of Susan Sarandon. It could really just take all the risks that it wanted, and they really paid off.
There are all sorts of different genres, aren't there, which dip in and become cult. I mean, sci-fi lends itself to the horror, of course. The Wicker Man, I think, is one we should hear from.
Sometimes the victim would be drowned in the sea or burnt to death in a huge sacrificial bonfire. Sometimes the six swordsmen ritually beheaded the virgin.
Dear God in heaven, even these people can't be that mad.
Edward Woodward there as Sergeant Howie in The Wicker Man. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago there was a remake, wasn't there, Jason? But in the original Wicker Man, people bow down to this film, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a film which continues to attract new audiences. But I think The Wicker Man stands out as one of the defining horror films. And The Wicker Man is one of those films, you know, without wishing to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, the ending is just one of the most powerful endings in cinema history. I think it's right up there with Planet of the Apes. You know, you're never going to better that. Horror films are very, very closely associated with cult pictures, quite often because they're quite cheap to make.
Let's talk about the directors and which ones have successfully moved from cult to mainstream. I mean, if we can even define that as success, because people are making great films within the cult genre. But people like Ridley Scott, Sam Raimi, Robert Rodriguez, David Lynch, they've now moved to mainstream, haven't they, really?
I think they have, but I think rather than them moving to the mainstream, perhaps the mainstream's moved with them. I mean, I don't think that David Lynch has ever made a compromised film. I mean, even Dune, which is regarded as his kind of tilt for the mainstream, probably his least subversive picture, is a film that he's very, very fond of, and it's certainly a very, very personal movie.
Where does Quentin Tarantino as a director stand? I mean, his work is heavily influenced by the cult films from the 70s, and he references cult films, but does this actually make him a cult director?
Well, I think Quentin Tarantino is one of those directors, you know, he's obviously a complete cinephile, and Reservoir Dogs is a cult film. It's a film that was made for very little money. It's a film that took risks with its structure, completely borrowed from endless other films, such as The Killing, the Stanley Kubrick film, various other foreign language films. And I think Reservoir Dogs is a film which is interesting because it wears its references very lightly. I think with that film, Tarantino didn't necessarily try to pass off some of the touches as his own. I think as his career's progressed, I think he's maybe become a little bit more disingenuous about where his references come from.
We've talked a lot about Western cult films, but let's look now at the rest of the world, Indian cult films, Asian cult films. Are they sort of definable in the same way that we define the ones that we're talking about here?
Absolutely. I mean, you have with cult film lovers, people that like to discover something, as maybe filmmaking from America and from other European countries became more and more homogenised, people began to look elsewhere for things that they could discover. And John Woo is a very good case in point. He's a filmmaker that cult film lovers particularly latched onto. One of the filmmakers that I very much like, Takeshi Kitano, the Japanese director of films such as Sonatine and Violent Cop, and more recently Zatoichi, are filmmakers that in Europe and America people very quickly latched onto because they were doing things that were different. There's always been this history of cult films and cult filmmakers coming from further afield. A great cult director is the Chilean-born filmmaker Alexander Jodorowsky, whose recent film El Topo, legendary film, a Western, which completely rewrites the rulebook. And it's really beloved and beholden by cult filmmakers because it's difficult to find anything that's comparable to it. So yes, I think it's very, very important to not just think of cult films and cult filmmakers being American films and American filmmakers, but to really look at the wider picture of films from all across the world.
Filmwriter Jason Wood. And if you fancy watching any of those films we chatted about and join the cult, you can get hold of most of them now on DVD. That's all for this week. This time tomorrow on The Beat, Mark Coles will be looking at the winners and the losers of the Mercury Music Prize, one of the most prestigious music awards in the UK calendar.